Welcome to Take Note on WPSU. I'm Ann Danahy. In 2007, Terry Engelder, then a professor of geosciences at Penn State, estimated how much natural gas could be accessed in the Marcellus Shale Formation using hydrofracking. That calculation led to a drilling boom across the Marcellus region in Pennsylvania. Widely recognized for his work, Engelder has advised state agencies and received funding from companies in the industry. Now retired and a professor emeritus, Engelder is working on a book called A Fracademic from Appalachia. Along with economic benefits, the surge in gas exploration in Pennsylvania led to environmental and health concerns. In June, the state attorney general announced the findings of a Pennsylvania grand jury condemning the State Department of Environmental Protection and State Department of Health for inadequate oversight of the natural gas industry. We spoke with Engelder about his work and that report. Terry Engelder, thank you so much for joining us.
Well, it's my pleasure, Ann.
You and I were talking right now. It's on the heels of a report from a grand jury in Pennsylvania, and it really raised red flags about the industry. I'm wondering, when this was all starting out in 2007, in that time period, were there concerns at the time that companies would come in, they would take shortcuts, or that there would be negative environmental impacts, and even concerns about human health?
One of the introductory chapters to my book looks at this issue of what the companies did when they came into Pennsylvania in the 2006, 2007, 2008 timeframe. And their experience was extracting gas from a formation called the Medina Formation. A lot of this was done in northwestern Pennsylvania. And one of the practices in extracting gas from the Medina Formation was to leave an open hole of about 3,000 feet. And that practice then was carried into northeastern Pennsylvania, into Susquehanna County. And of course, it didn't work. And it was that practice that led to a tremendous amount of methane migration. And it didn't take very long for the Department of Environmental Protection to figure out what was going on with these open holes. The large rush in Susquehanna County, for example, started in the summer of 2008. And by February of 2009, the people at DEP had pursued the issue of migrating gas to the point where they concluded that Cabot was leaving 3,000 feet or so of open borehole, and immediately told Cabot, you have to cement the entire borehole. But in the meantime, a considerable amount of trouble was created by migrating methane, particularly in a township called Demick, Pennsylvania. That will be the subject of this grand jury report that just came out.
Do you think that the State Department of Environmental Protection or the State General Assembly, whoever it might be, should have put the brakes on things and said, okay, let's study and find the best way to do this instead of letting things just go ahead full throttle?
Well, in any industrial process, there is a period of experimentation that goes on. And there are no models that could have been run ahead of time, for example, to predict that in northeastern Pennsylvania, gas would escape from formations above the Marcellus to cause this migrating methane. I think that largely this had to be something where a certain amount of experience was developed before anyone, either the industry or the DEP, realized what was happening.
So you've written and spoken about some of the mistakes you think were made, and we just talked a little bit about that, but some of the mistakes the industry made at the beginning, not getting baseline data on water quality, as an example, in one of the things that you've written about, and keeping the ingredients used in fracking a secret, saying they're proprietary. Who do you see as responsible for those mistakes?
Well, it was a series of different entities that made the mistakes. For example, the proprietary nature of the chemicals, that was a political decision. So that came out of Washington, and it happened during the passage of the Energy Bill of 2005. That became famously called the Halliburton loophole. I called that a mistake by industry, but actually it was a mistake by politicians who caved into industry lobbyists. And so you can imagine just an entire chain of events that led to that. Now, I've already indicated the open boreholes, that was an industry mistake. They were using a practice that worked in one area of the country or one area of the state, and then entering another area of the state, that particular practice failed. And the DEP then had the industry correct that. The business of sampling water wells ahead of time, that was something that the industry could have anticipated. And I think that in that case, this was just a piece of bad judgment on the part of industry operators. And again, when we talk about industry, we mean individuals within the industry, largely because there were a number of companies that rushed into Pennsylvania. And I don't think any of them actually systematically sampled the water of Pennsylvania, the drinking water of Pennsylvania, the way that they should have. Eventually, Chesapeake commissioned a study that sampled drinking water, groundwater, in the counties of Bradford and Susquehanna. And this is one of the finest sample sets or data sets on the chemistry of groundwater anywhere in the world. But it took these early mistakes, these early failures to fully understand the chemistry of groundwater to get Chesapeake to actually do a thorough job as the industry developed.
And Chesapeake's the company.
Yeah, that's right. The company that just went bankrupt.
If they had gotten this baseline data, who would that have served? Would that have served the industry? Would that have served the residents or all of us?
Well, I think that, in fact, the baseline data would have served Cabot as much as the citizens of Pennsylvania. Now, the reason I say that is Cabot is correct in claiming that northeastern Pennsylvania had a lot of methane in and around groundwater and in drinking water before Cabot showed up. But because they didn't take this baseline study seriously, measuring methane, for example, then they couldn't make the case that, well, this is what methane was before we started drilling and it didn't change after we drilled. And so all Cabot was left with was they were stuck with a set of methane and drinking water after they started drilling and couldn't go back in a retrospective study and say, well, we didn't do it. Now, Cabot has claimed that they weren't at fault, but I think that we understand quite well that Cabot made mistakes and that they are responsible for the problem. And the classic example of this, if I can talk a little bit about Demick itself, was that in October of 2008, Cabot was drilling a well called the Guestford 3 well. This is along Carter Road in Demick. And they drilled down beyond the conductor casing. This is the casing that it goes down about 100 feet and protects the well from soil. They drilled beyond that, and they had an open hole of somewhere on the order of 700 to 800 feet when they're bit jammed. And unfortunately for Cabot, with this open hole, they had drilled through a large pocket of methane, which ran up this open hole to the bottom of the conductor casing. And of course, the conductor casing didn't even go completely through the freshwater of Carter Road. So this huge charge of methane hit the fresh water, and that caused tremendous problems because it was methane in the water that made the water turbid. It made the water seem like a effervesced when the local citizens would turn their tap on. It also provided a brownish color that no one would want to drink. That was an iron oxide that was a consequence of bacteria interacting with methane and basically oxidizing iron that then was what was dropping out to make the water look a brownish color.
Right, from a layperson's perspective, to me that says the natural gas drilling is causing my water to go brown and I don't want to have to drink it.
Oh, absolutely. And there are very few people, very few experts that won't tell you right now that Cabot blundered into a situation, particularly in the Dimmock Township area, that they didn't want to blunder into, that caused a tremendous pushback from the locals. And the pushback was well justified, because my understanding is that even in interviewing people from Dimmock from my book later on, occasionally the effect of methane interacting with bacteria, which is the brown turbid water, comes up when these people turn their taps on. It doesn't happen all the time, but just occasionally, once a month, once every other month. It's sort of like a burp every once in a while. And this is still the effect of one or more of those wells leaking methane, causing stray gas.
Right. And a lot of issues like that are part of what was in the grand jury report and part of what was in this 2-year investigation. The Attorney General Josh Shapiro impaneled the grand jury to investigate the industry, and they just released their findings here at the end of June. And that includes these reports from people, their water's turning brown, people who say they're actually getting sick from it, and their homes are coated in grime. It's hurting their animals. It's raising health concerns with their children. And I'll just read you one statement from the grand jury. It reads, "We heard clear and convincing evidence that leads us to conclude that industry operations in Pennsylvania have made our children sick." What are your thoughts on that?
That's conjecture. And the reason that I state that is that it requires epidemiological studies of a longitudinal nature to prove that. Now, for example, when I was a child, I had nosebleeds all the time. I had terrible rashes when I was a child, and I was not anywhere near modern fracking, but had my parents suspected that my issues were caused by modern fracking, they wouldn't have hesitated in saying that. And so it is very clear from some of the epidemiological studies that there is an association where people have looked at such things as asthma and concluded that asthma and fracking are associated with one another. The cause, though, is the issue. So that statement that you just read, assume that epidemiologists have proven a cause rather than an association. And that's one of the issues that the State Department of Health took with the grand jury report. As you recall, there was an entire rebuttal from the State Department of Health saying that we were besmirched unnecessarily because the grand jury didn't understand the difference between an association and a cause.
The grand jury, to give a little pushback, it could be said the grand jury looked at this for 2 years, and they looked at a lot of evidence, and they heard from different people. And while you can't just take one anecdote and say, okay, well, that's, you know, that shows causation, that kind of the whole is greater than the sum of the parts. We have enough evidence here to point to a problem. And then that was kind of compounded by the fact that you have DEP officials testifying and saying, one, for example, said they had so many complaints they couldn't respond to them all, that they were just overloaded. Is it fair to dismiss the findings of the grand jury? Do you think they got it wrong?
The grand jury, I think, overstated the importance of the role that the Department of Health played in all of this and the Department of Environmental Protection. They didn't give either of those departments enough credit for being in control of the situation. And as you know, there was a long rebuttal from both the DEP and the Department of Health. And again, the Department of Health's rebuttal was based on this business of making a distinction between association. And everyone agrees that there is a weak set of evidence with an association, but the evidence for causation, it hasn't been done yet. And I might point out that the Department of Health actually wrote a peer-reviewed paper. And if I can, the peer-reviewed paper stated, "Studies of populations near oil and gas operations provide limited evidence of harmful health effects, including asthma exacerbations and various health reported symptoms. This is a peer-reviewed paper written by a number of co-authors, including epidemiologists from the Department of Health in Pennsylvania. And what they say is that now 15 to 20 years since the widespread application of hydraulic fracturing and horizontal drilling in states as diverse as Colorado, Pennsylvania, Texas, and Kansas, the epidemiological literature, and that's the important thing right here, not hearsay, on the potential health effects of oil and gas operations is still inadequate to definitively guide policy, as evidenced by the mainly low certainty. That's, there's a lot of these studies that have a fairly low certainty, and conflicting study reviews here. Now, so there is a large amount of anecdotal evidence, and the Department of Health really has to weigh anecdotal evidence with what they believe to be evidence of causation. And it's like finding a needle in a haystack. And what they're really saying is that they're on the job. They're looking as hard as they can and have had a very difficult time sorting out anecdotes from the actual cause that connects fracking to whatever health problems are being reported.
If you're just joining us, this is Take Note on WPSU. I'm Ann Danahy. We're talking with Terry Engelder, Professor Emeritus of Geosciences at Penn State. Engelder is known as the person who helped spark the push to drill in the Marcellus Shale Formation by estimating how much natural gas we could get access to. We talked with Engelder about the state's oversight of the industry, including a state commission he served on to review Pennsylvania's natural gas regulations.
Let me put everything in perspective, and this goes back to me and what I've done with the state of Pennsylvania. I've served on a couple of gubernatorial commissions, and the first one was the Marcellus Shale Advisory Commission, which met in 2011, with the explicit charge that the regulations of the state of Pennsylvania for oil and gas drilling had to change to account for unconventional operations. There were 33 of us on the committee, and environmentalists and town people and the industry and government officials, and then one academic type, that was me, sat and deliberated for several weeks in the spring and early summer of 2011. We made, I think the number was 95 recommendations to the governor, one of which was the governor and the state had to spend money on a longitudinal, a sensible epidemiological study that would lead to some fairly hard conclusions about this question of fracking and whether it affected the health of the state of Pennsylvania. And of the recommendations, only three of them were rejected. And one of them was rejected was this proposal that the state spend a trivial amount of money. It was $2 or $3 million or something like that, initiating these long-term studies that would answer the question, are people's complaints really complaints because they were caused by fracking, or are they just the general background of the headaches and rashes and asthma that a normal population has? And I just have regretted to this day that the executive branch said, no, we're not going to do that, because I think that was one of the more foolish things that came out of the results of this set of proposals. Now, on the positive side, of course, Act 13 was one of the results of this proposal, and regulations were certainly stiffened and made much more effective in terms of managing the oil and gas industry. But this one proposal was rejected, and I think that the state will continue to regret that.
Do you think, though, that the oversight, is it where it needs to be?
Boy, that's the $64 question. Because you can always look at a risky industry, and the fracking industry is about as risky as it gets. And you can say, well, let's do more inspections. Let's make them plug more wells where there's methane migrating. And so, yes, there's always the opportunity to even have stricter rules. It then becomes a political judgment as much as anything, where the lobbyists in Harrisburg are tussling with the legislators. And at the end of the day, we have to remember that the DEP answers to the rules and regulations of the state, the statutes of the state. So if one concludes, yes, this needs to be a more regulated industry, then the leadership for that probably should come from the legislative branch, and there need to be additional changes like those changes that were made with Act 13, which was passed in 2012.
For the people who are there in Dimock and other places who are the people who are being affected and are worried about their own health being affected, what would you say to them?
Oh, they had very real concerns. And they, among other things, had DEP put a moratorium on 9 square miles where Cabot was drilling in Dimock Township. And this still remains a concern. There is a lot of evidence that a lot of people were affected. Now, another fairly famous case is the case of Paradise Road, which is in Bradford County. These people were affected by a series of Chesapeake wells. And I had a student in my class when I taught petroleum geology that had his father one day out fishing on the Susquehanna River when he noticed a series of lines of methane bubbling up through the river. This is probably the furthest methane migration that I'm aware of, because that bubbling was coming from a well that was over a mile away. I mean, that's a long, long way to have methane migrating. My student had me arrange for an interview with his grandparents. This will be a chapter in my book. So I show up at this house and say, tell me about it. And my student's grandmother said, well, I was doing my wash one day, and I noticed that there were little orange polka dots on my white nylon blouses. And what happened was, of course, when methane gets loose, it interacts with bacteria and iron is released. And so the water that she was using, she was on a well, she's in the country, the water that she was using had been affected by the bacteria attacking, actually eating the methane, if you like, and producing this little bit of iron. And so when her washing machine spun around, you know, washing machines have a little set of holes on the side to get the water out of the clothes. And so each one of those holes, the nylon blouses, the white nylon blouses, were acting as little filters, each one of them catching a little bit of this orange stain, so that this is the origin of her polka dot. And then she said about a week later, our water well started banging away, and this was enough methane escaping that it actually caused the production tubing from the groundwater to whack against the casing of the water well. And they were living in a house that was, less than a mile away from where the Susquehanna River was bubbling, where the father of my student noticed the bubbling up. This led to a lot of heartache in the Paradise Road area. Chesapeake ended up, for example, having to buy 3 of the houses in that area because of the contamination that went on. I mean, physically moving families across the township. One of them was a teacher, for example, from Wyomissing, who is never forgiven Chesapeake and probably was doing jumping jacks when he heard that Chesapeake went broke, bankrupt the other day. I mean, this is how it has affected people.
So we talked about some of the problems, and you've seen these firsthand talking to these families who have been affected by it, but am I correct? You still support the development of natural gas. You're one of the scientist who's talked about it as a bridge fuel, moving us from coal and dirtier forms of fuel into the future, something that's, quote, cleaner than older forms like coal. Do you still support the natural gas industry? Has it been a plus for the state in your mind?
Well, it certainly has benefited elements of the state economy, for example, but it also has come with a risk. and we've reviewed a number of the risks. But even to enter into another little bit of an anecdote, you may recall in the spring that there was a debate among the dozen or so candidates for Democratic presidency running against Trump. And there was a question during one of the debates, would you ban fracking? And all but Amy Klobuchar immediately raised their hand saying, yes, we ban fracking. In effect, what they just said was, we're going to ban the use of gasoline. We're going to ban the use of gasoline for driving cars. We're going to ban the use of gasoline for using tractors to grow crops in the Midwest. There are a lot of different human endeavors right now that add to our lifestyle that are supported by fracking as such. Now, with natural gas, for example, I always remind people that if you want to ban fracking in Pennsylvania, really what you want to do is ban the use of toilet paper, because you've got to get that toilet paper dried. And the heat from natural gas in furnaces is what allows toilet paper to be dried and produced in bulk quantities as it is. Natural gas is used in the fertilizer industry, for example. And it is used in the glass industry. We wouldn't be able to make glass anymore without natural gas. So you can say, well, which one of these industries should we shut down?
In the interest of full disclosure, you've worked with the State Department of Environmental Protection as well as the industry. And do you think you come at this in an unbiased way?
Probably not. And the reason for that is that I have an undergraduate degree in geology from Penn State in 1968. And right from the very beginning, a geologist is trained to go out and find the natural resources. And the natural resource from the very beginning that I was trained to find was oil and natural gas. So that I have more than 50 years in experience with oil and natural gas. So that gives me an inherent bias. Whether or not I'm an industry shill, that's a debatable point. The industry didn't like it very much when I came out with that paper pointing out all of the industry mistakes. And there will be a chapter or two devoted to those, for example, in the book. But at the same time, that particular 50-year experience was what let me say with a great deal of conviction in that Penn State press release of January 17, 2008, the Marcellus is really going to be big. It's really going to have an effect on a lot of people in Pennsylvania. That was the benefit of that long, long experience.
Terry Engelder, thank you for talking with us.
Oh, I appreciate it. Thank you for the opportunity.
We've been talking with Terry Engelder, Professor Emeritus of Geosciences at Penn State. Engelder is known as the person who helped spark the push to drill in the Marcellus Shale Formation by calculating how much natural gas could be accessed. To hear this and other episodes of Take Note, go to wpsu.org/takenote. I'm Ann Danahy, WPSU.